Hello, Couch Constables. It has been a while. It has been a good long while, and I apologize for the long wait. We don't really have any excuse for it. We could say it was COVID, but it's just life in general. Now, since we've talked to you last, I think we've gotten married.
I was about to say, our last one was in like February, yeah, so we were already married. It was my birthday month, so very important.
Yes. This goes to show you just kind of the time vortex that we're all kind of caught in, where just dates and months just don't mean anything anymore.
Have no meaning.
No meaning whatsoever. So, welcome back. I hope you are all well and happy. Yes. And safe. I sincerely mean that. So, let's dive into some stuff today. So, today's episode is going to be a little different. Instead of a more in-depth look at a couple of cases, we're going to be highlighting a few news updates that we've seen in 2020 so far when it comes to true crime. Before I dive in, though, I want to go ahead and talk about our social media presence in case you want to interact with us there. We are on Facebook at Cornbread and Crime. We are also on Instagram at Cornbread and Crime. And we are on Twitter at Cornbread Crime, with no and in there. You can also email us at cornbreadandcrime@gmail.com.
In case you didn't get it, we're Cornbread and Crime.
In case you didn't get it the first 100 times, yes. I also want to kind of just highlight, just from being on true crime and general podcast Twitter and Instagram, that this is an amazing community. I have never seen so many people just following each other and interacting with each other in such a profound way, and it has really stuck out to me just how active and hungry all these different podcasts are just to interact with each other and support each other. So I'm very humbled by that.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's get into the content here. So technically this one's from the end of 2019, but it's kind of such a big deal that I wanted to cover it here. This is a kind of a quick highlight of the Clark County John Doe and his identification in December of this year. The DNA Doe Project has been on a roll recently, identifying does left and right. This one might be the most surprising out of their caseload, though. On August 26th, 1979... a headless man's torso was found buried in a shallow grave in a cave near Du Bois, Idaho. Other body parts were found wrapped in burlap in the early 90s in that same cave. His head was never found, though. Initial estimates were that the decedent had died between 6 months and 5 years before the discovery of the torso in 1979. The man's identity was finally confirmed on December 31st, 2019, through forensic genealogy. The man was Joseph Henry Lovelace, a bootlegger and accused murderer with multiple aliases, who died around 1916.
His last name was Lovelace?
Lovelace, yes.
Oh, how sad.
He was arrested after allegedly murdering his wife, Agnes Lovelace. He proceeded to escape from jail using a saw blade he hid in his shoe. The exact circumstances of his death are still a mystery, but the clothes described in his wanted poster match the clothes found with the torso in the cave. One theory is that Agnes's family caught up with Joseph and murdered him, burying his remains in the cave. Joseph's 85-year-old grandson is still alive and provided the final DNA link to confirm the identity. The discrepancy of the time of death estimate is believed to have been caused by the conditions in the cave that preserved the body.
That's crazy.
Oh yeah, that's kind of just wild how that's like the oldest case they've been able to crack. Like, forensic genealogy has now gone back that far to identify someone. And that just amazes me. Mm-hmm. The second bit of news I'm going to cover, I'm going to put a trigger warning in front of this. This next little snippet is going to talk about a sexual assault It does not go into any detail. However, if you wish, you can always feel free to skip forward a few minutes if you need that. So, on February 24th, DeKalb and Rockdale County Sheriff deputies arrested 58-year-old Wesley Cooley in Conyers, Georgia, after a hit came back on a sexual assault kit from an assault that occurred in late April 2017 in Tucker, Georgia. The match was conducted through the work of the Georgia Sexual Assault Kit Initiative Task Force, which was formed in 2018 to help solve cold case sexual assault crimes. Cooley was linked to 7 other cases dating back to 1999, 4 in DeKalb County, 2 in Atlanta, and 1 in Conyers.
Dang. Do we know, like, the success rate of this task force?
I don't know. That would be a good thing to look up. Definitely, because this is the first I've heard of this, but I think it's an amazing initiative.
Yeah.
Because I know there's a backlog pretty much everywhere of these kits. Over the past week or so, there have been multiple John and Jane Does that have been identified. Which is, yeah, amazing. It seems like every week there's someone else is getting their name back, and it is amazing to witness. So I'm going to go over 4 that I was able to find quickly that over kind of the past week or so have come to light as being identified. The first one, on August 7th, 1986, the torso and leg of a young woman were found in a Chesterfield County, Virginia landfill. Authorities determined that the remains had probably been kept in a cool environment, such as a refrigerator or airtight container, for some time before arriving at the landfill. Authorities also determined that the trash in the area of the remains came from Richmond, Virginia.
Sorry, I was just thinking, how can they specifically determine that this trash came, I guess, if it was, like, on a route?
Yeah, I don't know. I know in some landfills, I think they have, like, specific grids. Where you know, trucks from certain cities or areas will go to certain grid areas. I don't know if that's the case here or not, but it's a possibility. Or they could also just maybe based upon, like, paperwork found or
that's what I was
something
thinking.
Like that, yeah.
I don't know why, but when you said that, I just thought it was like maybe it just said, Richmond, Virginia, Taco Bell, like a receipt in there.
There's just an actual sign that says, Welcome to Richmond on it. So on August 13th of this year, it was revealed that the remains found in that landfill were those of 16-year-old Christy Floyd, who went missing in 1986, allegedly with an unidentified boyfriend she had met at work. Her family had never stopped searching for her, and had even contacted America's Most Wanted. Police are currently trying to identify and find the boyfriend. They stress that he is not a suspect or person of interest at this time, but believe he might be able to shed some light on her activities and social circles leading up to her disappearance.
See, I don't buy that. How in the world is he not a suspect?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
I think they're just lying so that way, you know, his aunt will be like, oh, Gregory, you knew her. Go to the police, you know. You're not a suspect.
Yeah, that might very well be the case. I don't know.
Shady.
On June 15th, 1993, authorities responded to a report of a deceased young woman at a makeshift campsite in the Pike San Isabel National Forest in Colorado. Despite a composite sketch, isotope analysis, and DNA analysis, this woman became a Jane Doe. Her DNA was submitted for forensic genealogy in January of this year, and the results finally were narrowed down to a birth father in May. Miss Jane Doe was Rebecca Ann Reddecker, who was 20 years old and homeless at the time of her death. Over the years, she had lived in various Colorado towns, such as Manitou Springs, Divide, Colorado Springs, Denver, Black Forest, Green Mountain Falls, and Woodland Park. And I apologize if I mispronounced any of that. Some of those living arrangements included group homes. Authorities are encouraging anyone who knew Rebecca, particularly in 1993, to come forward and provide details on her activities and associates at the time. On January 25th, 1986, the body of a woman was discovered by a truck driver near Mulberry Creek in Saline County, Kansas. She was buried as a Jane Doe with the nickname of Miss Molly. She was exhumed for DNA extraction in late July of 2019. Running that DNA provided a familial hit. It was revealed recently that Miss Molly is actually Robin Ann Green of Los Angeles, California. She would sometimes make trips to Minnesota to visit her children from a previous marriage. And indeed, her last confirmed sighting was by her children on December 28, 1985, in Minnesota. Robin had remarried a few months prior to her death to a man with a biochemistry degree who ran a fake pharmaceutical company that actually produced LSD.
Damn!
The autopsy report for the then Jane Doe indicated that she had given birth recently, so there is also potentially a missing child involved in here as well.
Oh no! Oh, that's terrible.
On June 22nd, 1982, the body of a young man was found floating in the Missouri River near the mouth of Little Muddy River in Williams County, North Dakota. He was exhumed this past Monday, and someone recognized his tattoos from reading the article about the upcoming exhuming of the body. Fingerprints confirmed a match to Philip Peterson of Montana. He had not been reported missing. And that's all I have on my side.
That's a lot. And all those happened within the week?
Yeah, all those does happened recently. Now, some of them might have, authorities might have gotten the confirmation a bit earlier, but as far as being publicly released,
yeah,
it all kind of came as an avalanche over this past week and a half, I think.
That's amazing.
And I might have missed some, and I apologize if I missed anyone. I can always cover them soon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We got the time with the virus. So my first story is a kind of a mystery. Are you ready?
Let's go for it.
I'm going to read you the title that caught my attention. This is from CNN. Corpse hidden for 30 years found during renovation of 41.2 million French mansion.
41.2 million French mansion?
Yeah.
Oh, million dollars.
Yeah.
Sounds like 42.1 million like
French mansions.
French mansions. Yeah. That's a lot of mansions.
So I'm retitling it to Corpse Hidden for 30 Years Found in French Mansion. So we actually have a picture of the mansion, and it is beautiful.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fancy. We'll post a picture of it. But it's beautiful, and it's been abandoned since the 17th century, and there's lots of ivy growing around it. And it's actually located in the super exclusive 7th District of Paris, which I don't know what that means, but please feel free to ooh and ah, because I need something.
Ooh.
So the house sold in January for $42.1 million. And when the renovations began in February, they actually found a body in the cellar. Apparently, through this entire process of selling this mansion, no one bothered to look into the cellar. The French prosecutors have actually started a murder investigation into the corpse. And the article just kind of abruptly ended, and the owners can now resume their renovations.
Oh, okay.
Because, important stuff. But it's interesting. For 30 years, there was this body just hidden in this abandoned building.
Oof. And how do they know that it was there for 30 years?
It doesn't say. I imagine they just...
I guess that maybe they have some sort of way of knowing, I guess. If they're willing to say that, maybe.
Confidently say that.
It's been there for 30 years. Wow.
To CNN, yeah.
I mean, if it's been abandoned since the 17th century, I'm surprised there's not more bodies in this thing.
Yeah. I'm sorry, it's the 18th century.
Oh, okay.
Oh, random tidbit. Many people have lived there, including poet François Coupé, which was a poet in the... I always have to do the math. 19th century.
Okay.
And he wrote plays and poems and...
I can't say I'm familiar with his work, but I will look him up after this.
You uncouth being.
So uncultured.
Yes. All right. So I thought we could end it with a little levity. So I went to True Crime Daily to find one more article. But then, of course, I'm accosted by my favorite, what is it called? Culprit.
Oh.
Florida Man.
Florida Man.
So I took some articles that had Florida Man or something to do with a man in Florida. And I'm going to quickly go over them. So, this is what the title of the article is. Deputies seek man who climbed into Wendy's drive-thru window in Tampa.
I'm already excited for this. These are always great.
And it's great because I have a picture.
Oh, you do?
I do. But let me give you the story.
Okay.
So it was around 11 p.m. and the police are actually now searching for a man accused of burglarizing. Burglarizing a fast food restaurant by forcing himself through the drive-thru window. So here's what happened. Apparently, he rolled on up to the drive-thru and he was really belligerent with placing his order. And there was a bunch of friends around. They even got out, because there's video of it too. They got out and kind of like, you could see them, looks to be them yelling at the employees at Wendy's. And then they even, the man even threatened to start a fight with the employees out in front of the restaurant. So then later he comes back and forces himself through the drive-thru window. Now, working in a drive-thru restaurant, those windows are pretty slim to begin with, but because it's COVID, it also has that partition. So, you know, like when you're at Chick-fil-A or Zaxby's, yeah, there's just 6 inches, really, of here's your food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Handing it on the tray. Are you ready for the picture?
Let's see it.
Here he is. Oh. He is in there. You see?
He is. Yeah. He looks like he's... It kind of looks like, this is going to be a really weird description, but like, if you're in the pool and you see something outside of the pool, but it's kind of like maybe like over a hill a bit, so you kind of have to lift yourself up out of the pool, on the edge of the pool, to kind of look at it.
Yeah.
That's what it kind of looks like.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah.
Very weird, but very accurate, I feel like, description. We'll post this photo on social media if you want to take a look at it yourself. And we'll shout out whoever has the best description of what this man looks like.
Yes.
if you can describe this situation, the best caption will get a special shout out from us on our next episode. How about that?
I like it. So that's my favorite Florida Man article, and he's still out there. They don't know who he is, and they're looking for him.
Jumping in the drive-thrus all around the Florida area.
I mean, isn't that the weirdest picture, too? Like, you can't really put, have you seen this man, above this photo.
Coming to a crystal near you. I think my favorite part is he's challenged everyone to a fight. Is that what he said?
The article said he challenged employees.
So, yeah, he's just kind of going around, like, you know, taking off his glove, throwing it on the ground, just throwing down the gauntlet, challenging anyone and everyone inside the building to come out and fight him. And that's my favorite part.
Pistols at dawn,
pistols
I say.
Pistols at dawn. Fisticuffs in the parking lot at the Denny's. That's what it's what's like.
Oh my gosh. All right. Another great one that I'll probably end with. I'm going to read you the title. Florida man attacks driver, upset over plastic divider. So, the story goes that a Lyft passenger named Travis Smith attacked his driver over the driver's decision to put, you know, like the partition because of COVID. He attacked him for that reason.
Oh.
And so Travis Smith was actually with his friend and his friend's son. And while the Lyft driver was driving the car, Smith tears down the partition, puts the driver in a chokehold. And so they have to, like, obviously pull over. And the police are called. And when they arrive to the scene, they just see two guys fighting in the middle of an intersection. And so the reason Smith says he attacked the driver was because the driver was, like, belligerent and rude, but even though he was the drunk person. Anyway, the Florida man is arrested, obviously, and charged with battery and child abuse because there was a child in the back seat, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because he was sitting in the back seat with his friend and his friend's son.
Oh, okay.
And that's, he started a fight.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess that's, I would say, more child endangerment than abuse, but
yeah,
he's arrested, and that's
leave it up to the authorities to sort that one out.
Let me and my non-criminal law degree, my Bachelor of Arts, tell you
how to charge these people. Yeah. Oh, good old Florida man. It's never a dull moment.
I mean, I think this might be a fun thing. We can just kind of not even read the stories. Just take Florida man throws alligator into drive-thru window, and, you know, just
I would be absolutely okay with that as being like a regular segment. Just,
we should. We'll honor Florida man.
Florida man Fridays.
Hey!
No, but yeah. And that was a good little bit of levity there at the end. I liked that. All right, anything else?
That's it for me.
Alrighty, well, thank you for listening in. I hope you enjoyed this kind of little different kind of segment thing we're doing here. We'll be back. We will. I know, and I'm not going to promise that we'll be back extremely soon, but I will say, though, that we are working on our next in-depth regular episodes. We've had some good Freedom Information Act requests come in. We have some good stories lined up, some good John Jane Does, some good stories from all around Georgia, and slowly but surely they're coming together.
Yeah.
And so I'm very glad about that. I will say that we've had to change some things on the fly over time too, because there's been a couple of does who've been identified who we were going to cover, or another podcast will cover a doe or a crime that we're looking at, and we'll have to kind of defer to them on that. But yeah, so things are moving, and my sincere hope is that it does come sooner rather than later. But I'm at the point in here where I refuse to make any sort of promises when it comes to a timeline. But I will say we are actively working on it, and my hope is that we'll have more content for you very soon.
Take your reliability expectations to another podcast, because this is not for you.
But to close this out, I will say once again, I hope you are all happy and healthy. Watch out for each other.
Yes. Wash your hands.
Wear a mask. All right, couch constables, we'll see you later.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.